Welcome to episode 47 of the Running on Om podcast with Julie Payette, healer, musician, yogi, plant-based chef, meditator, mother of four, and author. You may know Julie from her husband Rich Roll's podcast, which was one of my primary inspirations to start the Running on Om podcast almost a year ago. The Running on Om podcast needs your help to continue growing and reaching more listeners. If you are listening right now, please be sure to like us on Facebook and consider leaving a review on iTunes. I'm always open to feedback or questions, and I encourage you to leave our comments on our Running on Om Facebook page. Let's jump into the show. Julie has a wealth of information to share about practicing spirituality amidst living a busy life, how she practices gratitude on a daily basis, what it means to live yoga off the mat, the unique components of her Jai Release meditation program and how you can access this too, the experience of her meditation practice leading her to find her voice as a musician, what it is like having her sons as her band, insight from balancing her many roles, who inspires her now, wisdom on living as a spiritual being surrounded by others who don't share the same mindset. All this on the Running on Om podcast. Om.
Welcome, Julie, to the Running on Om podcast.
Well, thanks so much for inviting me to spend some moments with you.
I recently listened to a podcast of yours with your husband, Rich Roll, on the transformative power of practicing gratitude. And I'm curious today, I know it's around 12 o'clock Pacific time, what are you grateful for today?
Oh, wow. I'm grateful for this amazing mountain that I'm looking at right now as we're having this interview. We have an amazing sacred space that we've been cultivating for over 12 years. And I'm very blessed to live in a beautiful spot of abundant nature and a lot of sunshine. So I'm grateful for that, and I'm very grateful that I was able to go to a very amazing yoga practice today as well. So I'm feeling very, very plugged in.
Now, obviously, spirituality is a really big part of you and the work you and Rich do. When do you think you came into your own as someone who considered themselves spiritual? Or would that be a label you describe yourself? Was this something, an understanding you had from a young age? Or is it something that came in later in life?
Well, it's different for each of us, so you'll have to interview Rich to get his take on where he is. But mine came with, I was kind of born with it. I was born with the gene, with the spiritual gene awake. So I've always been exploring more what happens to us when we die and been very interested in what's beyond the physical experience. So at a young age.
Do you have a certain moment or a memory when you realized that you were really interested in that?
Well, I mean, it's all different levels and different life experiences bring you to them in different ways and in different intensities, I guess I would say. But you know, I mean, as a young one, I remember being, you know, kind of waiting around, like in my crib, waiting for someone to come and take me out. A little bit annoyed that my body wouldn't, you know, was little. And so I've always had the awareness that I was an old soul and I kind of had to wait for my body to catch up with me. And then later, it manifested in me riding, you know, grabbing a ride to church with the neighbors, you know, because my own circumstances wasn't, you know, my own family wasn't going on a regular basis. You know, they were like Methodist, you know, very sort of middle of the road Christian, not anything too radical. But, you know, I found a way to grab a ride with the neighbors when I was like six. So that was one thing. And then, you know, there's been other things, you know, in our life, you know, the death of a dear friend's son at age four, was another catalyst that, you know, definitely put me on my knees. And, you know, there's, you know, different things along the way, many, many, many things. But I always knew from a very young age that I was, you know, connected to something greater than this world.
Mm. So when did yoga come into your life? When was that first yoga class you walked into?
Well, it's been about, oh gosh, already 20 years maybe. And maybe a little less than that. You know, I walked into a class and did the practice, and I was completely, you know, out of shape and shaking and, you know, panting, and I'm still shaking and panting. It, you know, just goes on and on and on, but especially a lot then. And I left, and I've never felt so good in my entire life. Like, just, it really, really, really spoke to me. And so I went back, and I kept going back and back and back, and you know, just developed from there.
When did you have the calling to become a yoga teacher?
Ooh, that's been, you know, I guess I'm a natural teacher in a way. A lot of stuff that I share you know, I'll be in a space where I lose time and space, you know, and I think that's a really good measure of if you're in your dharma or you're doing something that's really in alignment with who you are, is you just sort of lose yourself in it and the energy sort of moving. But I wouldn't really, you know, I didn't really endeavor to become a yoga teacher, and all these programs of, you know, teacher training of this many hundred hours and that many hundred hours, I'm not really interested in it. I'm much more interested at the connection at a deep level, like through the heart and through the lineage and many lifetimes that I've lived before this lifetime. So I didn't have to get any teacher training certificate to feel like I had something to share. I am deeply, deeply connected to the Vedic lineage in many different ways, and have been for many lifetimes. And, you know, it's a part of me, and I'm a part of it. And I love all of it, but I'm not, I don't have a lot of titles. So I grew up in West LA yoga, you know, in rooms with Sean Korn and Saul David Ray and Shiva Ray and Steve Ross and Vinnie Marino. And so I feel very, very blessed that I was able to be in those rooms with those beautiful people. And still to this day, they are some of the finest yoga teachers that we have with us. Also, you know, early days with Eckhart Tolle in a room with, you know, 20 people, and Krishna Das, you know, with 20 people. So, you know, we sort of came up. That was kind of what was going on, and all of those teachers that I mentioned, they're all extraordinarily devoted and all have some amazing thing to share. And so I think I just sort of found myself through practicing with all of them, and, you know, when I teach, I honor them all and take a little bit from them, and then also, you know, share my own perspective.
Mm, very cool. What does it mean to you to live yoga off your mat?
Yoga is not just, you know, going to a class and, you know, having a Lululemon bag with a lot of words on it, you know. And it's funny, I heard an Indian master speak this week, and he was teasing us about the fact that, you know, you have a chihuahua in one hand and the Lululemon bag in the other, you know. And it's really kind of comical. Yoga is, you know, a full lifestyle, you know, that is about, you know, pranayama and breathing and connecting to the universal force and practicing, you know, the fundamentals of spirituality, which are compassionate love, neutrality, and, you know, spontaneous awareness and, you know, action in the moment. So yoga off the mat is, you know, I'm a mother of four children, and I'm an artist, and you know, and a wife to an Ultraman ritual author. And now, you know, he's training, he's writing, he's doing the podcast. So, you know, we obviously don't live in a cave. And yoga is about, you know, being able to be present in every moment and making high vibrational decisions in every, and actions in every case. So you stay in a point of neutrality, you have that connection to the divine, and then life happens to you. And some of those things can be, you know, viewed as beautiful things, and some of those things can be viewed as horrible things. But through it all, you maintain this neutrality and this basis of expansive connection to the universal force that holds all things. And so yoga is, you know, holding that awareness while being in your body and being connected.
Mm, that's really beautiful. I know a part of your yoga practice is meditation, and you have the Jai Release Meditation Program.
Mm-hmm.
How for you is your meditation? Where does it fit in your day? And what happens during it?
Well, huh. Well, first of all, I mean, I'd say that, you know, I didn't read a fiction book or a novel or anything except a spiritual text until about a year ago is the first time. I read spiritual texts my whole life. I was always, you know, always seeking in that. And it was funny because for the early part of my life, I kept reading in every single tradition, and everything that I checked out, it would all come back to meditation. And I was like, yeah, that meditation thing. Like, I've read about it a gazillion times, and I still have never sat down once, you know. And then finally, you know, I got to a point in my life, I actually, you know, suffered the loss of a beloved guru that I was kind of torn away from in a vague. And I didn't really, I was young and a little, you know, a little immature, a little green. I didn't really understand how to reconcile it. And so I had nowhere to go with it except inside my own heart. It was the only place I had left. I couldn't call a girlfriend. I couldn't watch a TV show. I couldn't talk to Rich about it. I couldn't, you know, there was no one. So I had to go inside myself. And I had been shown this humming meditation, which is an ancient Tibetan technique. It's a maha mantra, which is a great mantra. And I started to practice this. And then I started to rise at 4:30 in the morning, just kind of funny. And then in pretty short time, after a lot of tears and clearing, all of a sudden these songs started writing themselves. And I wasn't trying to write a song, but the song started writing. And simultaneously, I had developed a cyst in my throat as well, a huge golf ball sized cyst in my neck. And so it was, you know, that's the throat, right? The throat clogged there on an energetic level. So what happened as a result of me meditating in this manner is that the universe or divine mother or my highest consciousness revealed to myself that which I really am at the core and that which I desire to express in my life. And even though my personality, Julie, was not in touch with that fully, really not at all at that time, it showed it to me. And so I channeled the Jai Release meditation because that single technique completely shifted my life in that it put me in touch with my true authentic cord. And it was a little tricky with me because I wasn't creatively blocked at all. You know, I'm a very, very open channel for creativity. So I've painted, I've had, you know, big art shows, I've built two homes, I've been interior designer, I had my own fashion line. So it wasn't that I was creatively blocked, it's that I was missing the key element, which was my voice, which was singing. And so it got my attention through those things. So I recorded that. And then there's another element. The first step of the meditations. It's a 30-minute program. You can download it at ritual.com, and it's like under 10 bucks or something like that. And the first step is a humming meditation, which I just shared with you. Okay, so it's an active meditation that actually prepares you to maybe experience a moment of stillness. Because when you say you're going to meditate, you just sit down. Your mind's just running all over the place. So I don't know. I don't know if you're really meditating. That's really happening. So at least in the humming, you can hum and you can get yourself into a place of stillness. So it's really powerful in that way. The second step is a mantra to Ganesh, the Ganapati mantra. And I just know that in my times of my life, which have been, you know, they go and they come and go for all of us. Like, life is not about everything being great all the time. Like, that's not how it is. And in those times when I'm on my knees and I have, you know, to really dig deep for courage, Ganesha is a deity who always inspires me and comforts me. And so he is the half boy, half elephant deity who represents overcoming obstacles and challenges. And he does that through being playful, spontaneous, and, you know, kind of ready for anything. So it's a very beautiful mantra. It was like the second song that wrote through me. And, you know, the mantra is ancient and the melody is unique to me, to this form. And then the third step is a feeling technique, which I feel very, very deeply about. As we start to understand that we are more than our physical bodies, so we are energetic beings, and we are spiritual beings having a human experience, not the other way around. And I would even say at this point in the game, we are multidimensional beings having a simultaneous experience, but that'll be the next meditation. So this next visualization, it's a visualization which actually puts you in your own tree of life, protective field. And it's taking care of all your energetic parts of yourself so that you can be connected to your highest soul purpose. And then the fourth step of the meditation is simply an energetic nurturing song. It's called Mother of Mine, and it's the final step in the meditation. So all of this only takes 30 minutes, and the reason that I channeled it and share it is because it completely transformed my life, and so I wanted to share it with other people.
Wow. It's pretty incredible how through meditation, music came through you. I know music is something that is both a personal practice, but also something you share with your family and your friends play with you. What is that experience like?
Well, I mean, you just say, it's this thing, I think, it's the commission of a shadow artist, right? So my brother is a prolific musician. He plays with the Wallflowers. He's actually out on tour with Lucinda Williams right now. His name is Stuart Mathis. And he started playing guitar when we were very little. He was like 7, and we're only 17 months apart. But he played my whole life, and, you know, all my brothers and sisters played also. So we grew up in a musical family, pretty musical family, and I was always in awe of him. Like, I was in awe of him, and, you know, I had some musician boyfriends, you know, I was like, you know, the quintessential groupie, right? And just completely enamored with anybody who could play music. And I even became interested in producing some kirtan music about 10 years ago, and I wanted it to be really something new and not, you know, not so repetitive, which is, you know, what we hear in all the rooms. And it's like I heard enough, you know, Jai Ram, Shri Ram, like it wasn't really doing it for me. And I felt like there's something more that's available for us that we could do. So I wanted to put together this amazing band and produce them. I was still avoiding me singing, like it still wasn't really my thing. So I was like, yeah, we'll get other people and put them together and then they can do it, you know? And so, you know, just sometimes we're just not looking or we just don't get it. And so that's what I'm saying is like that's what meditation gave me. And when when it started happening and the song started writing, I mean, I don't play, I don't have any technical training. I don't know what an A, a C, a D, a G is. I don't know. And so when I talk to musicians and we're working together, I use words like, no, 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 no. Like play it tortured, 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 yearning, sweetness, you know, ecstasy. You know, and then they're like, okay, I got it. Like that's how I communicate. So the other amazing gift of this experience that I guess I created for myself is I guess I was waiting to do it with my children. And so in essence, it turns out that I, in fact, birthed my own band. So my my second to oldest child, Trapper, is my drummer, and he started playing drums when he was 8. I bought him his first kit. And then my son, Tyler, is my producer, arranger, guitar player, bass player, piano player, electronic person. He basically does everything. And I got him his first guitar, I think, when he was 5 years old, and then, you know, he was like, no, I already know how to play. He wouldn't take any lessons. And then he finally started really playing when he was 7, I guess. So what happened as a result of this experience is we were all three becoming musicians together. And so I learned, you know, I wrote and they learned the songs and I sang. And then from that, then we started to go into the studio, and then we started recording together and then changing arrangements, and then we started performing together. And, you know, as a mother, there just isn't anything more beautiful than that experience that I've been given. And I'm eternally grateful that I've had that with them, and it's completely expanded our life. And it's like when we play music, where we transcend any relationship, mother, son. We're just in the music, and that's what it is. And so it's giving me just a great blessing to be able to experience that amount of multidimensional life experience with my own children. It's almost indescribable.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I don't think many mothers could say that their two band members are their sons.
Yeah, it's no. I mean, it's a thing that and they still say yes. And as long as they say yes, I'll always play with them. Of course, they have their own projects that are they're actually prolific songwriters and amazing musicians. So they're getting you know, getting their own expression together. And I'm looking to do some more solo stuff, but I think they'll still be producing me and still be playing with me. So we'll see how that goes.
That's awesome. Now, when someone looks at your life as an outsider, I feel that they would be pretty impressed with all the things you juggle, being a mother of 4 children, being a chef, a healer, musician, yogi, and so much more. What do you feel is your secret to balancing all these different roles?
Well, the true secret is being extremely loose and extremely open and non-judgmental of myself. And by being able to expand my energy and allow things to move through me, I can be more prolific and accomplish much, much more, and also extend that loving compassion to other people. I've always had kind of a courageousness about myself. I'm not afraid to trail fan or I don't know. I never got caught up in that people needed training to do something or be something. You know, that being said, you know, I have a college degree and I have a degree from FIDM. So, you know, I did go to school. But with my own children, I cultivate their innate ability to tap into nature. And whenever the structure or the technique or the teaching gets to feel like a cage, it's no longer working. It's no longer serving. So it's about being very, very loose. And for me, I understand that I am only channeling soul energy. So the energy that I cook with is the same energy that I sing with, is the same energy I meditate with. It's the same energy that I practice yoga or teach yoga. And it's the same energy I love my children with. It's the same energy I do everything with. So it starts from that awareness of knowing that, you know, we are only serving the one. And that I think that's really the key. Like the second somebody comes in with a, you know, well, let's overthink this, and this has to be like this, and that has to be like that, and this is going to be like this. And because if I have that much structure in all those different hats that I have to wear through the day, throughout the day, then suddenly I'm feeling choked. You know, I'm feeling shut down, constricted. I can feel it in my body. And I'm like, oh, this is not in alignment. We have to, you know, expand. So I guess that's how I do it, because otherwise you couldn't do it. You know, one couldn't do it. It's not like I'm just the same as you are. I'm just the same as everybody. You know, I have the same amount of hours of the day. I have the same, you know, the same trials of life, the same, you know, the same everything. It's just the way that I process it, or I allow it to kind of dance through me.
Who is someone that you look up to in this whole process of learning how to balance, of dancing with the divine?
Wow. Let's see, who do I look up to? Well, I mean, I have some very dear historical inspirations in my life. I mean, the one is Paramahansa Yogananda. And, you know, I always, it's because of him, a lot because of him, and not from the organization, not from Self-Realization Center, from my own personal experience with him out of body. A lot of what I've done has been because of him and because of this Vedic lineage. So I look up to him. I look up to a beautiful monk that I'm working with right now named Vidya Dishananda. He's based out of Santa Barbara, and he's a beautiful, beautiful cosmic professor full of beauty, full of true expression of the Vedas. He meditated in the high Himalayas at, like, you know, 12,000 feet or 15,000 feet or 18,000 feet for, you know, years and years and years in caves. And then, you know, I'd say creatively, you know, Charlie Chaplin is a dear inspiration to me. And, you know, my husband, Rich, is also a big inspiration to me as well. And above all, I think above all, above anything, it would be my children. All four of my children.
They seem like pretty incredible people, for sure. In Richard's
memoir...
They are
very lucky.
Yeah, in Richard's memoir, he talks about you and your patience with him, both in transitioning to a plant-based diet and in his recovery. How do you... Mm-hmm. What kind of advice do you give for people who are in families or relationships with partners or friends who aren't necessarily on a spiritual or a healthy path, but they want to be? What is that like to be in a relationship with someone who is not necessarily living on the same vibration as you? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, it's really challenging. It's not an easy condition, and you know, I think it depends on. I would have to say, first of all, you have to get very real with yourself if you are with the right person, okay? So, I mean, I've been married 3 times. I had one very difficult karmic relationship that was a huge life lesson for me, not a pretty thing at all. And then I had a romantic fairy tale, beautiful, beautiful 10-year period with my boy's father. And then now I have... had a 15-year amazing, you know, spiritual union, soulmate experience with Rich. that is not about it being easy. It's just not easy. I think it's deciding, you know, there's this ability to be a healer. We all have this opportunity in our lives, and that is to make a decision to see somebody in the highest perspective that they are. And to, it's almost like quantum physics, right? So it's like the half empty glass or half full glass. The way you apply that perspective has energy to it. So you can choose to evaluate everything in a negative way and look at everything that's wrong, and that can be your experience. Or you can choose to see someone in their highest divine emanation. And maybe they're not even living it yet, but maybe you can feel it from them even beyond what's in front of you.
Wow.
And I think So it's, and we make these decisions every day, all throughout our day, with all different people in our lives, you know. And we could just, instead of judging somebody and instead of criticizing their struggles or what they are experiencing in their life, whether it's an illness, whether it's financial collapse, whether it's an addiction, whether it's, you know, overeating, whatever it is, we could choose to see them in their highest divine light and hold neutral, loving compassion for them to find their way. And one of the biggest things that I learned and that I really love to share with people is I know when I've had the tough times in my life, when things look like they're all wrong, and, you know, so many people projecting their own fears and negativity onto me, onto my family, onto what, you know, we're going through, or our choices or whatever it may be, is the only thing we really ever needed, and the only thing anyone ever really needs, is for someone just to say, you know what, I trust you. I want you to really know and hear this. I trust you, and I believe in you to find your way. That's all. And then give them a hug. Give them some food. Give them some tenderness. You know, do something. You know, hand them a flower. How empowering it is. I mean, if someone's in the fire and they're having a life lesson, or they have an illness, or something's not right, or they're out of balance with themselves and they know it, they're in enough agony already, right? It's not like they, that was one of the things, is it's already enough to handle the life in your own context without other people putting more on top of you. So I think it's an incredibly powerful practice, and I think if one can really get that and really share that and really hold that vibration, you will see divine healing come in and transform situations in ways you never, ever dreamed that they would. And it certainly has been that way in my life. You know, we committed at a level, you know, as a family, we went to the edge for you, and we made that conscious decision that we would do that. We never dreamed, you know, none of this was even on our, you know, on our list. Like, oh, we're going to do that. You know, like, oh, I'm going to grow up and play in a band with my boys. Like, what? You know, or Rich is going to, you know, I mean, Rich is going to do these races, and then he's going to be, you know, become a, you know, an author and a host of a, you know, world listened to podcast. And I mean, none of this was on our list, but the thing that we did commit to was that we would stand for each other, you know, with as much love as we could muster. So, you know, that's kind of how it is. And, you know, and it's not, like I said, it's not easy. It's not easy. It's not always pretty. But we've had some glorious, glorious moments. And, you know, and we're living a life that's worthy of time and worthy of the energy. You know, we feel when people like you and, you know, we were talking just before, you know, we went on air, but, you know, when we hear people like you are like in seclusion in a far, far away place and you're listening to the podcast and, you know, we traveled in Canada and we traveled all over and, you know, people stopping Rich and stopping me and, you know, they say, we feel like we're really good friends because we listen to the podcast. And we laugh and they go, and I understand that's ridiculous because we don't know you, right? But you guys really do know us, you know, and it doesn't matter that we haven't, you know, introduced ourselves or whatever, because we're connecting about a lifestyle. We're connecting about things that are important in each other's lives. And I genuinely feel that from you and from people when I meet them.
To close up our interview, I have a few fun either-or questions.
Okay.
Apples or oranges?
Grapefruits.
Early bird or night owl?
Early bird.
Mountains or ocean?
Mountain.
Smoothies or juices?
Depends.
Good answer. Thank you, Julie, for sharing your story and wisdom on the Running on Om podcast. It was truly a pleasure.
Oh, Julia, thank you so much, and I wish you the best and continued amazing experiences on your journey, and hope we see each other soon.
Thanks for listening to episode 47 of the Running on Om podcast with Julie Payette, healer, musician, yogi, plant-based chef, meditator, mother of four, and author. If you would like to connect with Julie and the Running on Om community, you can find us on runningonom.com, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. The Running on Om podcast needs your help to continue growing and reaching more listeners. If you have just listened to the podcast, please be sure to like us on Facebook and consider leaving a review on iTunes. I'm always open to feedback or questions, and I encourage you to leave your comments on the Running on Om Facebook page. This is your host, Julia Hanlon, and I hope you have a beautiful day.